Hello and welcome back to the Soapbox Podcast. And it's been a little while. There's been a lot that's happened. I don't really know where to start, but why has it been a while, Dad?
Well, I think there have been a few things getting in the way. I think the last one was back in, was it October, November? I haven't checked, but...
Might have been December or November, I think, yeah.
Yeah, well, I finished up in school land in chaplaincy. I spent a year in chaplaincy at Warunga, and then I got asked to move across the road to the conference office for the Greater Sydney Conference, where I'm now doing family and children's ministries for the Greater Sydney Conference Office. So there was a busyness of finishing up at Warunga and moving over the road. That was number one.
Number one. And then there's been a lot of other stuff happen. I'm moving as well, so that's kind of taken a bit of a busy season away with me, and that I've been busily making sure that that was happening and making all the preparations for that. So I'm moving back down to the Central Coast. So that's
Welcome
happening
back.
As well. So may as well be Sydney, to be honest, these days.
Almost. Well, they say that Newcastle is part of Sydney. They basically say that Wollongong, Sydney, Central Coast, Newcastle will all be one mega city. That's where it's heading. So
that's the way it's been forever. And we've also been navigating a bit of tough stuff as well, in that a guy I know passed away, who'd been a pastor, and so we had to navigate that as well. So lots of stuff was happening.
Yes, a lot of trauma involved in that one, and maybe future podcasts we have a chat about pastors and mental health. I think once we've been able to process what happened. But, yeah, that's probably the biggest thing that's taken us out is a pastor who passed away for various reasons and all the support that needed around that to support that beautiful family. So that's taken a lot of time, but we're back.
We hope. hopefully we're back more consistently than Josh and Jesse, though they've been way too consistent for what their standard was set. But today we want to talk about a topic which I think many pastors are talking about. If you go to any minister's meeting, you'll hear in the whispers along the side, most pastors speaking about the fact that their churches are missing families and that families haven't returned. I know that COVID's now years ago. We're still experiencing it. But families just have not truly returned. And pastors are puzzled in some ways as to why. So today we want to talk a little bit about that. So what's your perspective, Dad, on maybe why families aren't returning and what the... Let's focus more right now on what is the current state of affairs? What's going on? What are we seeing?
Yeah, well, I'm talking to a lot of pastors. As you say, there is a general feeling that our families in particular, as one segment of the population, have not returned to church since the pandemic for various reasons. Now, of course, the pandemic, if you like, was a game changer, a world changer. It really did disrupt habits that families may have had and may have created some new ones. And the question is, has the church responded appropriately to the worldwide changes, or have we just decided once we're back, forget online, forget what we were doing, forget the community that may have been created through our online programming, and let's get back to normal, which is what once was, which is three hymns, a prayer, and a 40-minute sermon. Oh, and don't forget the offering. So that's the question we need to talk about today.
So I don't want to rehash what Josh and Jesse already have, because Josh and Jesse, they spent a whole podcast, their first one back, speaking about the current state of church. And in that one, they mentioned a study that we've also spoken about. They mentioned the David Trim study on family worship and why people aren't staying in church. But what we're seeing is kind of the flip side is that, yes, okay, we've got church, but we're not attracting families back and we're not keeping them. And for me, that's a bit of a problem, because if we bring the families back, are our churches equipped to be able to minister to and keep the families if all we've done is go back to what once was? And throughout the pandemic as a pastor, as I think about what I was doing, I pivoted in, 2020.
Yes.
Very, very quickly in my previous location in two country churches to all of a sudden be doing online church. And we pivoted again to create different spaces for families, like opening Sabbath and closing Sabbath and different prayer meetings and all kinds of things. And in that space as pastors, we were all having a conversation about innovation. I don't know if you remember it. We were always talking, oh, we can innovate now. We can innovate. We can pivot. We can do new things. And then when I moved churches, I noticed that there was a different phrase that people were saying. We just want to get back to what we had. We just need to get back to what we were doing. And this is a bit of a controversial question, but is what we were doing before actually effective? Because all the research we've seen has said that it wasn't actually being effective. That's the David Trim research. That's the SPD perception study that we've spoken about before. That's a few other studies that have come out from Barna have said that we weren't actually being effective in keeping our young people and families even before the pandemic. So is this just kind of a conglomeration of all of that together?
Yeah, well, some have said that when it comes to other parts in our denomination, like teachers and teacher shortages and issues in our school system, and right now the school system is facing a real lack of Adventist teachers available for our schools. And what they say is the pandemic brought forward changes that were rolling down towards the school system, and I might add the church system, that have really now, that may have been 5-10 years down the track, have hit us right now. So it's really accelerated some of these dark realities that we need to face as a church. And I think the biggest one is that our church worship service was and could be now is again adult focused, with providing teaching for adults and a sermon that bores our children and maybe even our adults out of the pews. And the problem we had is that when we went online, and I wish I'd brought some Zoom chairs just before 2020, I'll be a very rich man today, because everyone learned how to do Zoom fairly quickly and other online sorts of forums, and we pivoted online, and I think we did pretty well. And what we saw was families gathering in lounge rooms and interaction, if you like, in the worship service. There was a lot of variety. There was a lot of feedback. There was not necessarily a talking head so much as interactive worship services. Maybe the parents had a cuppa in hand. The kids were maybe playing Lego at their feet and other things. There was various games, activities kids could do as part of the worship service. And I think we did pretty well in that online space. But also families realised that instead of getting up and rushing to be at church by 9:30, 10 o'clock, and all that goes about getting kids and adults into the car and on time to church, that they could do it well at home. They could go online, do their worship service, then spend time as a family, Sabbathing well together. And they ask the question, is going and sitting in church and listening to a boring 40-minute sermon, is that really Sabbathing well? And that is really the crunch question that churches need to ask, is how can we help our families Sabbath better?
Hey, that's important. And I have been looking at some church calendars, not just my church. I don't want to throw only my church under the bus. I've looked at a number of other churches and their calendars, and there's no space to take a breath all of a sudden. It's like we're trying to cram 3 years worth of programming into a couple of months. And it's for me as a pastor, let alone thinking about my members, it's actually anxiety inducing, going, I'm out here, I'm out there, I'm out there. Not that I don't want to be out and doing my ministry, but because we've all rethought what our priorities were during the pandemic. And I love those programs, but doing them all at once, is that really, one, going to be helping our family to Sabbath well, but two, helping our church to live in a rhythm where we can actually serve the community? I heard something else in what you were saying, and I think I want to tease it out a little bit more for a moment. I have been in many conversations recently where church leaders have said the words, And now we'll start our main service.
Yes.
Do you know what the main service is? The main service isn't the singing or the children's story. It's not the offering. It's not any of the other creative elements like the drama or anything else you decide to do. No, the main service is the preaching.
Yes. Yeah. And that has been an issue. As I think that the pandemic has highlighted that again, that we think that everything boils down to the talking head. Is what I call the last frontier of intergenerational ministry, or the final frontier, is the fact that we seem to think that the talking head on Sabbath morning at 11:30 or sometimes 11:40, because we want to take it out of all the lovely worship elements, and then we say, now it's the preacher's turn, and the preacher stands up and preaches for, 40 minutes or so, and
we wonder why. Which is fine.
It's right, but families, when they get are going home at, I don't know, 12:30 or even 1 or 1:30, start to ask the question when they've got whinging kids and hungry kids, and this is the reality of life, is it worth going back for that again next week? Or do we find another way to do it better together? And the pressure to family well and to care for two or three whinging children, and let's face it, the pandemic has caused an uptick in our babies being born. We noticed that, but there's a lot more babies being born.
Beginner Sabbath schools need to be getting prepped.
Yes, because there's a wave coming through. But will they come back to church, or will they come to church, is really the hard question to ask. And the question asked there about what is worship, and is the main service the preaching event, is something that I think is up for debate. And is it really just a talking head and everyone listens while the expert in the pulpit expounds what his pet topic or her, what their pet topic is, and whether that's Daniel, Revelation, or other forms of things that churches, there seems to be a big uptick in prophecy and Daniel and Revelation since the pandemic. I noticed that, Andrew, but I've noticed that in the churches I've been to, is that prophecy and prophecy seminars is big since the pandemic in Adventist churches.
Yeah, I think because we missed out on doing it for 3 years. And anyway, that's a whole nother topic. I don't want to get into it right now because I might be poking too many bears. But there's a stat in your soapbox that people can go and find from the 27th of February. And it says in from Barna Research that Joel Barna found that 60% or 6 out of 10 families make a decision of which church they will attend based on the children's programming and inclusion in all the church is. So 60% of the families that might come to your church or come to any church, any of our Adventist churches, are thinking about the children's programming, so Sabbath schools.
Yes.
But not just Sabbath schools, because Sabbath schools isn't all we should be offering for the children, but the rest of the church program as well. Do they feel comfortable in having their kids in the worship service?
Yes, and there's a whole lot we discussed there around reverence and also how the church is set up. Is it a question I asked in the soapbox? Is it a doctor's or an airport waiting lounge? Or is it more like a family lounge room? And when you look at the pandemic, one thing it highlighted was the joys of enjoying worship in the family lounge room from home helped people realise that, hey, my kids don't have to sit static and look still to worship and be reverent. There's other ways to be reverent. And the idea of play and spirituality is a big topic right now that's been discussed in the children's ministry's sphere of things. And also around intergenerational connections and warmth in our churches, and all those things can be talked about. And only with a few tweaks, maybe we can create some of that, because families are really looking for community, not just for mum and dad, but for the children as well. Now, here's the problem, Andrew. When I go to many churches, the children's Sabbath school rooms are an add-on. Often they're the last to get air conditioning. You walk in and they've got old seats from the 1970s that must have been on special back then, the plastic seats, you know what they are. They've often got posters from the 1960s and 70s still on the wall. Paint is peeling. The room smelled musty. When it comes to safety, there's no thought about doors that have windows in them or open visibility. The children's Sabbath schools just don't feel good places to be in many churches. And that's a place that parents are going to walk into first with their children before they walk into the main worship service. They want to check out their children's Sabbath schools, make sure they're safe, make sure that they smell okay and look okay and that there's safety there in that the people in the room, all those things they assess in the first few seconds as they walk into a Sabbath school room, and they'll make that decision within those few seconds if they're going to return next week or not.
And I think that's, it's like you've been sitting in my meetings the past 2 weeks. But that's all important stuff, right? Is a lot of people don't think about, is there a window in the door that parents know that their kids can be seen from outside and everything's all good? And it goes even further than that, I think. I think that we've, because of burnout, because we've lost volunteers, and pastors right now will be stressing if they're listening to this and they listen to what you've just said, because all they're thinking about is, I've lost all of my volunteers. And that's a whole nother discussion, but I've noticed in the last little while that people are now all of a sudden starting to be willing to step back into some of these spaces at a lesser amount than they used to. But trust me, there'll be some old people and there'll be some other people in your church who are willing to beautify your classrooms and are willing to go to the, not just go to the ends of the earth to do it. They're willing to invest financially to make it happen. I'm seeing it happen. I know that it's happening. And I think it's an important thing that church boards need to start talking about is how do we show that these places and these young people and these families are valued in this space?
Yeah, well, then you move from the Sabbath school rooms into the bathrooms and the toilets. And do the toilets smell appropriately when you walk in there? Is there appropriate change rooms and parenting rooms for the parents? And you look into any good shopping centre, place like that, the parents' rooms are whiz-bang, A1, we want you to know that we care and want you to come back again. And so the parenting rooms and the bathrooms are great. Often our bathrooms are the last places we renovate. And as I've been travelling around since the pandemic, I've been rating the smells in bathrooms. And I'll tell you what, some smell like there's been a dead possum in the roof for the last maybe since before the pandemic and hasn't been cleaned out. So, we need to really do a user-friendly assessment of all the spaces that our families visit on our church premise from the time they get out of the car to the time they go home. And the question to be asked is how do we rate? And people say, oh, well, come on, we're here to worship God. And the question, and what I say there is, why is your lounge room air-conditioned but your children's Sabbath school is not? Why is your bathroom at home a lovely place to visit but your children's or your men's or more men's than women's, but both toilets are not? Shouldn't we be providing the best that we can do at church? After all, is where we go to worship God. So
a mentor of mine back in the day said, we are representing God with what we offer up. In that, for many people, they associate God with our building. And so, does our building? I'm not saying the building's sacred. Don't get me wrong. There's the whole theological thing there. What I'm saying is that for most people that walk into our building, that is the representation of God that they take away. And I think we do need to invest significantly in our spaces for many churches. And that's an overwhelming experience, especially as RMS bills increase and whatever else. But our boards and our maintenance committees need to be thinking about the family-friendly flow and the everyone-friendly flow of our buildings. I guess my next question is moving away from facilities per se, what does the budget say?
Now that's another soapbox altogether, but just quickly, a thing to think about there, Andrew, is look at how much budget dollars you spend on adult evangelism, and then compare that to the amount of money you spend on the children's Sabbath school rooms or on children's or family evangelism. And if you are not prioritizing families and evangelism in your budget, then think again, because we could talk about the 4 to 14 window. talk about the fact that parents are choosing and where they attend based on their children's programming, but also their outreach as well. If you win the heart of a child, you bring the family along for the journey as well. So maybe we need to rethink post-pandemic about how we are doing evangelism and how we are reaching or not reaching the most reachable people group on the planet, which is those in the 4 to 14 window.
Yeah, it's... I get quite frustrated at this because I think about how many people make a decision for God and it's not followed up on. And I know that Jeff Parker at the Union and Justin Boyd and many others are working hard on how to solve that problem. But even recently, I've had kids that I'm doing studies with, and I've heard the sentence come from someone, oh, they're a bit young to be doing studies, to be baptized. And I just had to shake my head. I'm like, just because they're 8 or 9 doesn't mean that they can't make a decision for God. And it also speaks to the way in which we value the family. Because if this kid goes home and says to mum and dad, hey, today I made a decision that I want to be baptized, and they never hear from the pastor, yeah, they know how valued, one, their kid is, and two, their family is in the church. And they even if it's true or not, they take a perception with that. And it's very difficult to change that perception as families I've worked with who now only associate certain pastors in negative words because they felt like they weren't followed up on and that their kid wasn't taken seriously when they made a decision for Jesus. And so there's all of these little things that we do that make a massive difference for families. If your kid makes a decision, call them up and say, hey, your kid made a decision. I'd love to have a conversation about what this is going to look like. Let them know that you take it seriously. Right from woe to go as a pastor and as other church leaders, we all have to do those little things to show the family that they're important. And there's been other situations where I've watched as families have been asked to move seats because their kids were in the way. What does that say to that family? Even if their kids were physically in the way, it says to that family that you can't be here. You have to be very careful with the spaces and the way in which you operate so that families are always leaving with the message that you're loved here, you're valued, you're important.
You're in the soapbox now, Andrew, yourself. But I think you make a very important point that, and I like to conclude what you're saying there by saying it's tantamount to spiritual abuse. If we ask for a decision at our summer camps, at our big camps, at our Pathfinder camporees and weeks of worship, and our children are making maybe 2 and 3 decisions a year sometimes with what they go to, and yet we fail to follow them up, then I'm saying don't ask for a decision if your pastors and others are not going to follow it up, because it's spiritually abusing the child. And by the time they get to the middle Pathfinder years or middle Sabbath school years or middle school years, they're saying, why make a decision when no one's going to follow me up? I'm not important in your denomination. And we send a powerful message to our kids when we run fantastic programs but refuse, for whatever reason, to follow up a decision for Jesus.
And I think for me, that flows through to everything that we do as a church, as I've spoken about before, is that if we're going to want families at church, if we want kids at church, if we want them to stay in our churches as they go through their lives, we have to follow through and follow up each and every single instance. So I've recently had some kids that have made decisions saying, I'd like to get involved for service.
Yes. How are you going to do that?
And so it's like, how am I going to do that? Where can they serve? What space is there? What are they interested in? And the thing is you've got to follow up with the parent and say, hey, so-and-so said they want to get involved in service. Where do you think we can plug them into? And in fact, for some of these people, it's, hey, they actually want to serve alongside their parent. So it's creating a family-friendly space from woe to go. And it's not just the physical flow, it's a spiritual flow of your building as well, that and your church, that we have to be thinking about.
You're spot on there, and I may do another soapbox on that, on the idea that when families serve together, it grows the faith of the kids exponentially and cements the decision they've made. So once you baptize a child, not the end, it's the beginning. Okay, well, how do we continue to disciple this child? How do we continue to disciple this family? Because it's discipling families that actually consolidates that decision and grows the whole family exponentially with their spirituality. But also back to our worship space, you mentioned it briefly there, that we need to once again ask that question, are our worship spaces for our main worship servers, are they waiting rooms or are they more like a lounge room? And I think if we can realise that sitting, looking at people's heads in the pew is not a good definition of reverence in reality, and look at how we can create a more warm space in our worship centres, we may go a long way to bringing our families back. And, I mean, look at the pandemic. They were, as I said, they were sitting often with food and with things to do and more interactive. And the talking head took a bit more of a backwards seat. And maybe that's something to think about when it comes to how we do worship. The problem we have here is that there's two things, I think, going on. Number one, we are Adventists. We believe in the urgency and the soon return of Jesus coming and ready for that. And so often we don't invest in families, don't invest in church because it's going to burn anyway. And so we sort of, the sense of urgency stops us from investing. Oh, we need to evangelize for Jesus, but we don't invest in families. We don't invest in our church buildings. We don't invest in our spaces because, well, why spend $5,000 on air conditioner when we can spend it on a proxy seminar? And that is the rationality that comes through very clearly in our meetings, Andrew.
Maybe the air conditioner might have greater evangelistic results if it's in the children's Sabbath school and people feel welcome there.
There's a soapbox moment right there. Quite right there. Amanda.
But I think we've kind of covered all of what we've spoken about pretty well. I want to jump ahead a little bit and ask the question as well. I've seen a bit of a theme in some of your soapboxes lately and in some other discussions online. And I think Jose Cortez from the US, I think it might have, was it him or was it someone else? But he shared a quote saying, if your children's ministries is great and your teens' ministry is all right, but your youth and young adult ministries don't exist, you're failing. Yes. In other words, what is your pathway to invest in young people, not just when they're a kid, not just when they're a teenager, not just when they're a youth or a young adult, but all the way through? Because I think as a church, we're a little bit guilty at times of we hear that all the young adults are leaving, so we funnel hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars to that problem.
Yeah.
And we don't invest elsewhere. And so the children's ministries lackluster, or we let the teen or youth ministries go a bit lackluster. And I think as we think about this whole family flow, we have to think about it in terms of we need to be investing in all of our spaces so that when one person rises, we all rise together. It's not just investing hundreds of thousands of dollars in the 24-year-olds that have already made the decision, just investing money across each of the different age groups and making programs, not just programs that are great, but churches that are great across all of those age groups that have really shut the back door in each of the different age groups and have created warm community.
And that's where I think intergenerational ministry need to be really thought about in how do we create that intergenerational where the youngest to the oldest feels loved. And you're talking about flow. The other word I want to use is living in crescendo. There's a book I'm reading right now called, I can't remember what it's by, but it's called Living in Crescendo All the Time. And it talks about living on that edge of that wave and staying on that wave that you're surfing and not falling off. And the idea of living in that crescendo, I think, really speaks into church and international ministry. And the idea of somewhere you want to be because it's something happening that is relevant to families everywhere. So, yeah.
Stephen Covey, by the way.
Oh, that's right. Yes, Stephen Covey. I'm reading to the book at the moment. I recommend it. And the idea of living life in crescendo is what he's talking about. But I think, what about living church in crescendo? Well, and you can take all the chapter summaries out of that book and apply it to the church, and you suddenly find a very relevant way to talk about church and how we do church that speaks to the conversation we're having today on this podcast. Mm. So, yeah.
And if another one that works as well in that is one called The Infinite Game by Simon Sinek. And that's based on the work of a theologian who was speaking about, he applies to business, but it's based on the work of a theologian from way back in the day. He was focusing on, yes, your important work is ahead of you, right? But also you don't get a win today. That what does a win look like today? The win looks like making stuff better, but we're constantly making stuff better. It's an infinite game. It doesn't have an end in the beginning. It is something that we are in a constant work to do, an investment today, but no investment tomorrow. It kind of doesn't matter.
And that's, I think, where we need to really ask the question around our theology of the second coming. And I believe the second coming, by the way, but what did that theology cause us to do or not do that may be hindering living in that infinite space or that crescendo? That's something to think about. And while we're dropping names of books, of course, Growing Young asks the question, and they say every board meeting decision should be asking this question: how does this decision prioritize families and children everywhere and our young people? And that helps you guide what you're doing. So the Growing Young, but also shout out to Peter Rahnfeld, who's written a lot of books in this space recently. It's like Peter's best work is happening in his retirement, and he's got time to write. And he's got some great books around how the church has changed. And a new one is on Pentecost and living and what that looks like, living that time between the cross and Pentecost. And when you look at that Acts 2 experience, that was living in crescendo. And Acts 2 talks about families being together, breaking bread together, giving to the poor, selling all they have to work together, and the Lord added to the number daily those who are being saved. So that idea of the infinite space of living crescendo is very clearly in Acts 2 when you read through that chapter in the Bible. So,
and I think as we're getting very preachy, we won't be coming towards a conclusion.
Don't want to be preachy, do we?
No, but N.T. Wright, famous theologian outside the Adventist Church. He may as well be Adventist in my view, but anyway.
He's pretty close.
N.T. Wright, in a lot of his writing on Paul, because it is that's his kind of specialty, is all of Paul's work. But he notes that Jesus had called us to live as though heaven was here and now. Right? And so the Acts 2 experience is living out the fruits of the Spirit together. It doesn't mean that we're perfect, but it means that we're living in community rather than against one another. We're living in that unity. We're living in that body of Christ. And we're trying to create a space where all people are welcome. And I'm going to repeat that, where all people are welcome in our churches. And our churches need to reflect that, is what N.T. Wright was saying. And I've been reading one of his books, which is a devotional, which is kind of a compilation of a fair few of his works. And in multiple chapters, there's this reflection that what does our church look like? Does it reflect what Christ would have it look like?
Or does it reflect heaven? And I think one thing that families found in the pandemic was that they could Sabbath well together and get outside, experience nature, because they could go to the beach, a place like that, and have some of those experiences as a family. And they realised that maybe Sabbath could be a little bit more of heaven. Imagine if families felt that going to worship service and going to church on Sabbath was like stepping into heaven for a short time each week.
A delight.
And N.T. Wright's getting at is the idea of our Sabbath and our seventh-day theology. If we begin to think about what does it look like now rather than waiting for tomorrow, it may change a little bit of how we experience and do church in an intergenerational space together. But I don't think in heaven there'll be youth groups, there'll be children's groups, there'll be adult groups, there'll be men's groups, there'll be women's groups, as good as they are. I think there'll be everyone together, worshipping together and doing things together. And I think that community that is built in that space is something that families, not just families, our lonely elderly, our seeking young adults, our singles are all yearning for and are currently not finding in the business that created post-pandemic. As you said, we've tried to do everything now, and if you like, we're burning out ourselves and our churches by trying to do it all and have it all post-pandemic. mainly to step back a bit, have a bird's eye view, and bring some of N.T. Wright's thing you talked about, and the idea of how do we Sabbath better in church, in worship, in our social events, in our spaces, and what we do, and what does real community, real heaven community look like?
And I think Sabbath is at a we're Adventist. We're Seventh-day Adventist. Sabbath should be at the core of this discussion, because I think the Sabbath answers a lot of the questions that we've actually asked as well. And what does it look like to Sabbath? Well, is Sabbath a 50-minute or a 40-minute talking head, or is Sabbath doing community well together and finding a way to make it into a bit of a delight, rather than for some people it might feel a bit like a burden? And I'd hate for church to feel burdensome for families.
And that's where you get into your uncle or my brother's research around, do we actually consume Sabbath and consume worship rather than doing genuine, transformational, warm community together as Romans 12 talks us to be like. So, and Acts 2 and those sorts of verses. So there, maybe need to get Brendan on sometime for a soapbox discussion. To talk about consuming and what that looks like for us, because often I think we fall into the consumer mindset, and that affects families and community and togetherness as well.
So to summarize, with a question for people to walk away with, the answer I can hear is that we can bring our families back, right? But the root of the issue is, what are we doing create a space where we can keep them?
That is the question I asked in the soapbox too, is people say, Darren, can you come and do your balloons and preach your children's sermon and bring our families back? So yeah, I can do that. I can bring your families. But the question for you, church, is how are you going to keep them? And that is what our soapbox podcast today has been about, is asking some of those what if and I wonder questions and doing a bit of an analysis of your spaces and your programming, and ask, how is this prioritising our families? How is this prioritising our children? In fact, how is this prioritising intergenerational warm community is the ultimate question your church needs to ask.
Well, I think we've solved it all. we haven't. There's so much more to it, and I think it's an ongoing discussion. I know some pastors might find this rather burdensome, but it's not. It's somewhere we stick at. We're not going to change it all in one board meeting or in one staff meeting. It's something that takes time. And as a church community, we've got to choose to strategically walk the path together. And as we finish up, I'd encourage you to go and find us on our social media, particularly Facebook. We want to start making that space better. You know, pastors, we just sometimes never focus on things 100%. Everything gets about 50%. But I want to thank you all for listening, and we will be back as soon as we can. Fingers crossed it's in a fortnight's time, and we will, you'll hear us then. And with that, over and out.
Over and out. See you next time.